Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, and thanks for joining. We started our discussion on the subject of government transparency for a really important reason. We live in a representative democracy. And that means when we elect people to office, when we entrust them with the power to create rules and regulations and spend money, we do it with the expectation that they have our best interests in mind. We do it expecting that they will represent us, not their own selfish interests. Transparency is one way that we as citizens can check and make sure that our officials are doing just that, working for our best interest and not using their positions for personal gain. Unfortunately, a recent story highlights why we are failing at that in Michigan in some pretty spectacular ways. Former Michigan House Speaker Rick Johnson was among four people who pled guilty to abusing power while in office. Specifically, Johnson admitted to accepting more than $100,000 in cash payments and other benefits from multiple sources while chairing Michigan's now defunct Medical Marijuana Licensing Board. Now, how did this happen? What does it mean for our state? Why is it important? And this is the critical question. How do we prevent this from happening again? This is not by far the first time that we've seen a public official caught up in a pretty spectacular scandal like this in Michigan, both at the state level and at the local level. So what is it about the infrastructure of transparency and ethics in Michigan and the enforcement of that transparency and ethics that allows this to repeat itself over and over again in our historical narrative? That's where we continue the conversation here on Detroit Today. Why do we continually see public officials caught up in scandals like this in Michigan, and what do we do about it? To help us answer those questions and more, we're now joined by Lauren Gibbons. She is a reporter who covers Michigan politics for Bridge Michigan. Lauren, welcome back to Detroit Today.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
So I want to start with just the scale of this scandal, which I think is probably not gotten enough attention. This wasn't just about the $100,000 that Rick Johnson admits he took. This was about the setting up of a very big industry here in Michigan. There was an awful lot of money involved in that industry, and that industry is going to have a real effect on lots of other things, both economically and culturally here in our state. So let's just start with the basics. What happened here, and what led Rick Johnson to the point where he pled guilty to this?
Absolutely. So as you said, this was a pretty key position. He was chairing a medical marijuana licensing board, and that meant that he and the other members of the board got to were vetting and ultimately chose which companies got licensing to grow, distribute, sell, essentially participate in the medical marijuana industry in Michigan. It was a new industry, and it was an industry where a lot of companies were vying to get a piece of the pie. There was a lot of money going around, and it was something where it was just a time where a ton of companies were trying to get in, and there was this backlog while the board was vetting these requests. So the fact that Rick Johnson was accepting bribes admitted to in these plea agreements, accepting bribes for participating and for essentially potentially trying to give certain companies a little bit of a leg up in this process is very significant. And this investigation has been going since at least December of 2017. Mm-hmm. It's still ongoing. Four people have submitted plea agreements at this stage, but it's still open. So we could see additional charges being levied in this investigation.
Yeah. I think it's important also to note that when you see someone plead guilty in these public corruption investigations, often it is as, a vehicle really to getting at other possible defendants. It's unusual, I think, to see somebody at the level of a House Speaker plead guilty, because there isn't a much higher of an official to get. But I think it's notable that U.S. Attorney Mark Totten has said, look, this is open and there could be more. Tell us more, though, about Rick Johnson, who is essentially at the center of this story. Lots of people probably don't remember him. He was Speaker quite a bit ago.
Right, yeah. So Rick Johnson was a former Michigan House Speaker. He served in the House for several sessions and then worked as a lobbyist prior to his job as the Marijuana Board Chair. And his appointment was a little controversial. Some people suggested that maybe he shouldn't get that position because of his former lobbying connections. And there was some concern, but he was appointed anyway. And one interesting thing to note is that technically the board members were subject to some disclosure requirements. They had to file certain disclosures. And the fact that we're seeing such a big investigation around this shows that it was just, those were apparently pretty ineffective and were pretty easy for Rick Johnson and others to get around.
One of the things that I want to kind of stop you there and go back to is the revolving door aspect of all of this, this idea that you can be House Speaker today and in a few years, maybe in a few months, depending on the circumstances, you can be lobbying the legislature on behalf of an industry. It is one of the areas here in Michigan that is very loosely regulated, and it has everything to do, I think, with the problems that we have with this level of corruption.
Sure, and certainly we have seen a lot of lawmakers take that path with term limits. A lot of times they build up this knowledge base and certain policy issues, and many of them do choose to go into the lobbying industry using that knowledge. And there's no rules against it in Michigan right now. Certainly, we've seen a lot of lawmakers do it with no controversial aspects or any knowledge of nefarious activity, but certainly a lot of transparency advocates have pointed to potential concerns and the possibility of things like this situation where people are using that knowledge and using it to benefit themselves or others they're connected to. So it's something that has been suggested to change, to potentially stop the revolving door or put limits or a time constraints on how soon former lawmakers could enter the lobbying pool. But so far we have not seen a major movement on that this session, and it hasn't been passed in previous sessions either.
Yeah. I'm talking with Lauren Gibbons. She's a reporter who covers Michigan politics for Bridge Michigan. We're talking about the marijuana bribery scandal that was brought to light last week when former House Speaker Rick Johnson, one of four people who pled guilty to abusing power while in office, specifically Johnson, admitted to accepting more than $100,000 in cash payments and other benefits from multiple sources while he was chairing Michigan's Medical Marijuana Licensing Board. We would love to hear from you, the listeners, during this conversation as well. What do you care about this bribery scandal? Do you think it affects our government? Is it a problem with government effectiveness that we have these kind of scandals unfold every so often in Lansing? Do you think we're doing a good job of holding government officials accountable in Michigan? How could we be doing a better job of holding them accountable? Also, how could we do a better job of dissuading them from this kind of activity? This is far from the first scandal involving either a state legislator or other public officials here in Michigan. 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we can include you that way. Let's go to Cindy in the Cass Corridor. Cindy, welcome to the show.
Yeah, I was calling in about the FOIA. We have a digital capability that we're not using in the city of Detroit for information about the government. And a lot of times when you FOIA, it costs so much that they tell you it's going to cost so much that you really can't go through with it. So more information. You shouldn't have to FOIA for a lot of this stuff. It should be archived on the Internet.
Cindy, that's a great point. And it's one of the things that I think I hope the state legislature takes a look at as well. Lauren, how would better transparency in Michigan have affected perhaps this scandal with Rick Johnson? I know it's always difficult to go back and say, well, if this had been true, then things would have been different. But it does seem that this strikes kind of at the heart of the inability to know more about what state legislators are actually up to.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit hard to compare apples to oranges here. Obviously, he was on a board that was not elected at the time when some of these bribes were happening. Mm-hmm. And when he was a lawmaker, though, he was not covered under the Freedom of Information Act. No lawmakers are covered under that act, and the governor's office is not either. So there's been a lot of talk of expanding FOIA to include the governor and the legislature in this act. But as Cindy pointed out, it's something that is enforced differently depending on what local government or state agency or whatever body you're trying to get information from. The amount of documents you can get or how much you're charged or just how easy that process is varies quite substantially depending on what department you're trying to FOIA through. So I think a lot of transparency advocates also say that it's important for this to be applied more equally under the law. And clearly there's a lot of gaps in our transparency laws in Michigan right now that are preventing that.
Yeah, I want to go back to this scandal in particular. Can you talk just a little about the way this behavior, and we, of course, don't know the extent of it quite yet, but what effect that could have had and what effect, I guess, it likely had on the development of not just the medical marijuana business, but the recreational marijuana business, which is you know, just now kind of finding its footing. This was a new industry, and the idea that operators were able to buy a different kind of access for themselves to decision makers, it kind of frames some of, I guess, what we're seeing and dealing with now in the industry.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people at that time were trying to get their foot in the door and were frustrated because of how long it was taking, and in some cases it resulted in them not getting licensed. Certainly, it's a little hard to say, you know, this was several years ago at this point, exactly, you know, how many businesses were impacted, but it certainly casts a pall over the entire process if the chair of the board was giving preferential treatment to certain companies and allowing that process to be corrupted. And I think a lot of members of the industry certainly felt that and are, you know, very concerned about how the way that this industry was started and the corruption that we're seeing as part of this investigation has ultimately impacted the state's marijuana industry as a whole.
Again, 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we can work you into the conversation that way. Lauren, this is not the first scandal, as I said, that we've faced in Lansing or in local government here in Michigan. Talk about how this kind of fits into the context, I guess, of that history.
Yeah, certainly we have seen corruption scandals before, and at this juncture, there are other active investigations pending against former elected officials in Michigan. Certainly there are continued investigations going on into the activities of former House Speaker Lee Chatfield. We have not seen the results of that investigation quite yet. That's ongoing. But very serious charges against him as well, in terms of how he handled his money and also sexual harassment and potential assault allegations in that case. So certainly we have seen a lot of concern about how money in politics affects decision making, how the conduct of certain lawmakers or other people in power have affected our government as a whole. And I don't think that this conversation that we're having about Rick Johnson is the end of it either, because the investigation is ongoing and there could be more. All four people who were charged and filed plea agreements as part of their plea agreements agreed to cooperate with the investigation, potentially testify, mm-hmm. provide additional information to investigators. And so clearly that door hasn't closed either. So we could continue to find out more about that particular situation, but it's certainly not over and probably won't be over for quite some time.
Yeah. Daniela on Twitter says, why is it important for electeds to disclose their finances? If your finances affect your personal decisions, why wouldn't they impact the decision that office holders make? Dragon Lady on Twitter says, leaving politicians to write the laws that require their transparency makes about as much sense as allowing the Fed to investigate their own decisions. Self-regulation breeds corruption. Let's go back to the phones here. Chris in Troy. Chris, welcome to the show.
Hey, great to be here.
Yeah, great to have you. Go ahead.
Well, I've got a Tennessee story to tell you. I hope it's relevant.
Tennessee's in the news too right now.
I just moved back to Michigan from Hickson, Tennessee. And while I was in Tennessee, I was represented in my district by a representative named Robin Smith. Robin Smith and the Speaker of the Tennessee House, Glenn Cassada, at the time, they both formed a phony consulting company. And they scammed other members of the Tennessee House for phony consulting and a phony mailer scam. Robin Smith pleaded guilty to felony wire fraud.
Mm-hmm.
That was over a year ago. Robin Smith, to this day, despite pleading guilty, she's still walking free. And if I'm not mistaken, the former Speaker of the House, Glenn Cassada, her co-conspirator, he's still serving at the House.
Hmm. And so, Chris, I want to give you a chance to talk about, as a citizen, how that makes you feel about government and its effectiveness and its honesty, and then compare that to your experience here in Michigan. You've moved back here, you said. Do you feel like things are better here, or maybe they're just kind of similar?
Oh, I'm so happy to be back in Michigan. It's night and day. I do feel represented here. I do feel that my voice is heard here. Whereas in Tennessee, I was duped. And the worst part about it in Tennessee, when Robin Smith resigned, there was a There was no election to find her replacement. Somebody assigned her replacement, and this new fella who took over for Robin Smith, he's a disgraced former Christian pastor who cheated on his wife while he was a pastor.
So, Chris, I mean, the appointment thing is often part of the way that we replace, people who leave office, and then there is an election a little later. But it doesn't sound like that served your interest terribly well, that process in Tennessee. I really appreciate the call, though, and the point about trust and faith in the government and the people who represent us there. Lauren, that trust here, depends, it seems to me, on some new action, perhaps, by the legislature to hold itself more accountable. You do cover, statewide politics here. What's your sense of how this might be improved with the new majority in Lansing, and I guess the timetable for those improvements?
Yeah, certainly. And I think that was an interesting point, too, that Michigan is not the only state that has dealt with transparency issues or even corruption issues. We saw some interesting stuff down in Ohio as well with their former speaker. But it's definitely something that's on the minds of a lot of Democratic lawmakers. Senator Jeremy Moss has been working for additional transparency and ethics reform since he was elected to office. And he said that he's hoping to get something through in the next few months here, at least through the Senate, on expanding FOIA to include the legislature and the governor's office. Now, this has been an ongoing issue. It's been a largely bipartisan issue. We saw it's been voted through the House a few times with nearly unanimous or unanimous bipartisan support. The question is now whether leadership gets it to the finish line, gets it signed into law, and then starts to look more seriously at some of these other transparency efforts. Is the revolving door something that should come up for lobbying, and how long after you're a lawmaker is appropriate before you can become a lobbyist, or financial disclosure, implementing the ballot initiative that was signed. Does that need to go further? Does FOIA need to be overhauled to make it easier for the public to access? It's easy to say, these specific reforms, expanding FOIA, is something that a lot of people have been talking about for a long time. But obviously, it goes deeper than that as to truly address some of the issues we've been talking about this morning. It would probably need to be a more robust conversation.
Yeah, for sure. It needs to include some changes to campaign finance as well, which is kind of a shambles here in Michigan. Okay, Lauren Gibbons, always great to have you here with us on Detroit Today. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Okay, that's going to do it for us today. Come back tomorrow when we're going to be talking about a new idea to better treat people with mental health issues and how to support those who help them. Also, if you like the show and enjoy listening, share it. Share it with your friends and your family, your neighbors. Wonderful when we get new people to be part of the community that we're building here on Detroit Today. This is 101.9 WDET-FM, Detroit's NPR station. Your connection to news, music, and conversation. We'll talk again tomorrow.